Bob McClain. Hello, howdy, greetings, welcome, salutations, and penultimate workday of the week. Alohas to you. Here we go into the fourth hour of the program, the bonus hour. You know what we do in this one as well as all the others. Let's do that. Grab the phone. Use the Ingalls Advantage talk line, 800-347-1063. Common Sense Retirement Planning text line number, 71307. And my email address is very simply bob@1063word.com. By the way, before we get underway, another Wazer traffic spotter texting in. Bob, please advise your listeners, Pelham Road is closed eastbound at Black's Drive. They've had problems there all day. This morning they had a water main break, and that's created all kinds of ancillary problems as the day has worn on. So in the last hour of the program, and on a pretty continual basis, I keep you up to speed on the loony left and their takeover of the American university system and how the leftist educrats have been filling their heads with liberal mush. Walter Williams, a retired econ professor, wrote a piece at Town Hall today that is a long way towards explaining what actually is happening here. The title of the piece is Miseducated or Stupid. A recent Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation survey found that 51% of American millennials would rather live in a socialist or communist country than any capitalist country. Only 42% preferred capitalism. 25% of millennials who know who Vladimir Lenin was view him favorably. Lenin, the first premier of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, the old USSR. Half of millennials have never heard of communist Mao Zedong, who ruled China from 1949 to 1959 and was responsible for the deaths of 45 million Chinese people. The number of people who died at the hands of Joseph Stalin may be as high as 62 million Russians. However, almost one-third of millennials think former President George W. Bush is responsible for more killings than Stalin. By the way, Adolf Hitler, head of the National Socialist German Workers' Party, the Nazis, was responsible for the deaths of about 20 million people. The Nazis came in as a poor third in terms of history's most prolific mass murderers. According to Professor Rudolf Rummel's research, the 20th century, mankind's most brutal, saw 262 million people's lives destroyed at the hands of their own governments. Young people who weren't alive during World War II and its Cold War aftermath might be forgiven for not knowing the horrors of socialism. Some of their beliefs represent their having been indoctrinated by their K-12 teachers and college professors. There was such leftist hate for former President George W. Bush that it's not out of the question that those 32% of millennials were taught by their teachers and professors that Bush murdered more people than Stalin. America's communist, socialist, and Marxist have little knowledge of socialist history. Bradley Berzer, a professor of history at Hillsdale College, explains this in an article for the American Conservative titled, "Socialists and Fascists Have Always Been Kissing Cousins." Joseph Goebbels wrote in 1925, "It would be better for us to end our existence under Bolshevism than to endure slavery under capitalism." This Nazi sentiment might be shared by Senator Bernie Sanders and his comrade, Congresswoman-elect Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Goebbels added, "I think it's terrible that we and the communists are bashing in each other's heads." When the tragedies of socialist regimes, such as those in Venezuela, the USSR, China, Cuba, and many others, are pointed out to America's leftists, they hold up Sweden as their socialist role model. But they're absolutely wrong about Sweden. Johan Norberg points this out in his documentary, Sweden: Lessons for America. Americans might be surprised to learn that Sweden's experiment with socialism was a relatively brief flirtation, lasting about 20 years and ending in disillusionment and reform. Reason magazine reports Sweden began rolling back government in the early 1990s, recapturing the entrepreneurial spirit that had made it a wealthy country to begin with. High taxation and a generous array of government benefits are still around, but now it's also a nation of school vouchers, free trade, open immigration, light business regulation, and no minimum wage laws. School vouchers, light business regulation, and no minimum wage laws are priceless, are practices, rather, that are deeply offensive to American leftists. Our young people are not the first Americans to admire tyrants and cutthroats. W.E.B. Du Bois, writing in the National Guardian in 1953, said, "Stalin was a great man. Few other men of the 20th century approach his stature." Walter Duranty called Stalin the greatest living statesman and a quiet, unobtrusive man. There was even leftist admiration for Hitler and fellow fascist Benito Mussolini of Italy. When Hitler came to power in January 1933, George Bernard Shaw described him as a very remarkable man, a very able man. Yeah, able to commit murder. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt called Mussolini admirable and said he was deeply impressed by what he had accomplished. In 1972, John Kenneth Galbraith visited Communist China and praised Chairman Mao and the Chinese economic system. His Harvard University colleague, John K. Fairbank, believed that America could learn much from the Cultural Revolution, saying, quote, "Americans may find in China's collective life today an ingredient of personal moral concern for one's neighbor that has a lesson for us all." Professor Williams concludes his piece with this: "Are Americans who admire the world's most brutal regimes miseducated or stupid? Or do they have some kind of devious agenda?" This one needs to be on our Facebook page, Ms. Moneypenny. And you have millennial friends who may be unaware of the facts surrounding those brutal regimes. And when you talk with some of them, well, those people just didn't employ the elements of socialism the right way, or communism the right way. But the way we would do it, of course, it would be a workers' paradise. Yeah, right. Bobby, the description in the survey of what millennials are thinking is frightening. "Glad I talk to my teenager constantly." Wow. Bobby, "I'm voting stupid." Enough said. Hope not. Hope not. Make sure that you have a pretty good idea of who you're voting for and why. Quarter after six here on the Bobby Mac Show. Take a quick break here. We go to the phones when we come back, as we return in the bonus hour here on Thursday. Welcome back. 6:20 here in the Bobby Mac Show as we wait our impending doom from a frozen hell that's on the way this week. Something. I don't know. We'll see. You know, it's the constant drumbeat. You know, the news media has to have their shiny object of the moment. And it's always something that's going to cause impending doom, whether it's an asteroid that is somewhere out in space and is headed directly for planet Earth and is going to kill us all, or whether it's climate change, which is going to roast us all, or whether it is a big blizzard. They always act amazed, you know, when we get snow in the wintertime. And conversely, we get heat waves in the summer. How can this be happening? Jeez. To the phones we go. Let's head to Greenville and bring in Rick here on the Bobby Mac Show. Hi, Rick, and welcome to the program.
Hey, Bobby. It's actually Rex, but I appreciate you. Love your show.
Thank you, sir.
I just had a couple of questions for you. Didn't we used to hang communist trash years ago?
There was a time when that would happen, yeah. Or at the very least, imprison them.
Well, maybe we ought to bring that back. But my main question was about Bush Sr., and I'm 48 years old, so I'm trying to remember back to the time frame of when it was said. One of his speeches I just wanted to ask you about, and I don't want to bring any negativity towards a man that just passed and all that sort of thing. But
right.
Was he not the first one to mention the New World Order in one of his speeches?
You are correct in that thought. He was the first. We actually played it the other day. We played the audio of that the other day.
I'm sorry I missed it. I've been thinking about that ever since all this come about lately, and I just, I love the man, but also I'm quite scared of that statement.
Yeah, you know, I heard just a little bit of Mark Levin talking about the changeover into what is commonly referred to as Ronald Reagan's third term, because H.W. Bush was the veep for the two terms of Ronald Reagan's presidency and then ran on his own. And he mentioned something that I had forgotten, that was when George H.W. Bush was elected president, they immediately, as one of the first things they did, sent out 3,000 letters asking Reagan appointees for their resignations. And the rationale behind that, of course, was because they wanted to put a kinder, gentler face on the Bush presidency rather than that arch conservative, that former B grade actor, that know nothing cowboy Ronald Reagan.
the best man ever for the job.
You bet. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, and I appreciate you, and enjoy your show all the time.
Thank you very much, Rick. I appreciate that. Good to have you here, and I hope you guys have a great Christmas. Bobby, it's not wintertime yet. Winter doesn't start until December 21st. That's calendar winter, okay? It's not meteorological winter. And you see why. It's just cold outside. This is kind of interesting, given all the discussion that has been going on down at the border with the migrants approaching there. New polling data out, the Harvest Harris poll. Immigration continues to be the most important issue for supporters of President Trump, Republican voters, and conservatives as a result of the poll. The latest monthly Harvest Harris poll finds that for nearly the entire year of 2018, immigration has been the biggest priority to Trump supporters and conservatives. 57% of those who describe themselves as conservatives and 55% of Trump supporters said immigration is the number one issue facing the nation. And I think it would be hard to argue with that opinion. Look at some of the stories here in recent days. Illegal immigrant families shatter records in November. Okay? More families in November, illegal immigrant families coming in, than ever. Meantime, Homeland Security said last Friday a convicted murderer was among the members of the migrant caravan, and he was caught trying to sneak into the U.S. late last week. Until 4 months ago, Miguel Angel Ramirez, 46, Angel, what a name for this guy, was in a Honduran prison serving time for murder up until 4 months ago. On Saturday, he was nabbed near the San Ysidro border crossing, along with two other Honduran illegal immigrants, having just crossed without permission. Mr. Ramirez told agents he traveled with the migrant caravan that seen thousands of people from Honduras bust into Guatemala, then Mexico, and arrive at the U.S.-Mexico border, plotting their entry. While immigrants' rights activists have called the caravan members asylum-seeking families fleeing the violence back home, the Trump administration has said those cases are a small minority within the 8,000 to 10,000 immigrants. Homeland Security says it has identified 600 criminals within the caravan. Mr. Ramirez, meanwhile, served 16 years in prison in Honduras for his murder conviction. And so what? Then he got out? Just in time to join the caravan. What a happy coincidence. You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of Jimmy Carter and the Mariel boat lift when Castro emptied out the Cuban jails and put them all on boats and sent them to Miami. Meantime, there is this, and this will tug at the heartstrings of progressives everywhere. A Honduran woman is believed to be the first member of the migrant caravan to have a child in the United States after scaling the border wall with her family and giving birth within 24 hours. Is this the stupidest law in the books, this birthright business? The move is likely to reignite the debate surrounding anchor babies and birthright citizenship. President Trump threatened in October to end birthright citizenship with an executive order, although others believe it would require a constitutional amendment. Mary Yuri Elizabeth Serrano Hernandez, 19, was more than 7 months pregnant when she left Honduras, along with her husband and their three-year-old son. Late last month, they finally made their way to Tijuana, where thousands of other Central Americans had gathered, hoping to cross into the United States. At the makeshift camp, she and her husband say they feared for their safety after being surrounded by Mexicans who weren't happy they were there. Scared and outnumbered, they decided to cross the border illegally. U.S. inspectors at the main border crossing in San Diego are processing up to about 100 asylum cases every day. Some desperate migrants are crossing the border illegally, avoiding the wait. So now we have our first anchor baby from the group of immigrants who are clustered across the border in Mexico, where obviously the Mexican government is not real thrilled to have them. The mayor of Tijuana saying the other day, how am I supposed to pay for this? Holy cow. Bobby, where did you get the article that you read from Walter Williams? That was originally at townhall.com, but it is now easily accessed on our website. I beg your pardon, on our Facebook page, facebook.com/1063WORD. And you can access it there at your leisure. 6:29 here in the Bobby Mack Show. Still a half hour to go in the bonus hour, fourth and final one of the Bobby Mack Show on Thursday. Annie is ready to go in the news center. I'm right back on the other side here on Thursday. Hoo-ah! Great to have you along. 6:37, 23 before 7 o'clock here in the Bobby Mack Show. Boy, this is not good. I feel for this guy. You may have heard, even though we don't pay that much attention to the NFL anymore, a little more since they're down to about, what, maybe two or three players throughout the entire league that are still kneeling during the national anthem. But Alex Smith, a former Kansas City Chiefs quarterback and now quarterback for the Washington Redskins, had his leg really, really broken badly. You may recall, those of you of a certain vintage will remember an injury, gruesome injury that happened to another Redskins quarterback a number of years ago. Washington quarterback Alex Smith's recovery from the broken tibia and fibula he suffered last month is now reportedly being complicated by an infection. Poor baby. Washington radio station reports that Smith has had devastating complications after having surgery on his leg because of a post-op infection. Burgundy Blog, a reference to the Redskins team color, reports that Smith will likely require further procedures in order to get rid of the infection. You may remember Joe Theismann had a really terribly badly broken leg as well, playing against the New York Giants in a Monday night game. The team released, ironically, you know the old saying, a history doesn't repeat, but it rhymes? Alex Smith was injured, I've forgotten how many years it was, but to the day of Joe Theismann's injury. And Theismann, in fact, was in the stands watching that game. Pretty spooky. The team released a statement today saying that Smith and his family remain strong and asking others to respect their requests for privacy. The blogger added the complications have put his return to the field in jeopardy, although Ian Rappaport of NFL Media reports it's too early to know if those ramifications will end his career. It's a serious issue in any event, and we wish him well and a speedy recovery. Speaking of football, you know, with the ratings problems that the NFL has had, there was a story I shared with you, I think, yesterday or the day before, touting the fact that the NFL ratings are up 5% over last year. But what the story didn't mention was that their ratings were down, I think, 15% last year and 20% the year. In other words, they're still in the red. Yeah, they're still in the hole, ratings-wise. And they're also having ad problems. A bunch of advertisers have decided to flee from the NFL because of the exorbitant prices that the league is charging for ads in their games. And with the declining ratings, they're not getting the return on their dollar that they're necessarily looking for. Well, in any event, Vince McMahon, you remember him, he's the CEO of WWE, the Professional Wrestling League. He started another league, the USFL, a number of years ago, and that was pretty much a disaster. It only lasted 1 year. It was on NBC, I think. Now, McMahon is back with a new professional football league, this one to be called the XFL. And yesterday, they unveiled the inaugural 8 cities and stadiums that will host its teams when play begins in 2020. So they're still more than a year away on this. Oliver Luck, who is a former NFL quarterback himself, and in fact is the dad of Andrew Luck, the Colts quarterback, he is now the commissioner of the XFL, said the league will focus on maintaining a fast-paced, safer on-field product with fewer game stoppages and penalties. Ticket prices will be significantly lower than other U.S. professional sports leagues. The league will begin play on February 8th, 2020, that is the weekend after that year's Super Bowl, which is, you know, the traditional conclusion of the pro football season. The 8 XFL teams will be in New York, Dallas, Houston, L.A., St. Louis, Seattle, Tampa Bay, and Washington, D.C. Games will take place in the big stadiums, MetLife Stadium in Jersey, Globe Life Park in Arlington, Texas, so it's not going to be a Jerry World. Of course, that stadium is owned by the Cowboys owner. TDECU Stadium in Houston, StubHub Center in Carson, California. I think that's the facility that the Chargers are playing in now until the new stadium is built in L.A. The Dome at America's Center in St. Louis, CenturyLink Field in Seattle. That may be where the Seahawks play, I think. Raymond James Stadium in Tampa Bay. That's where the Bucks play. And Audi Field in Washington. I'm not sure if that's the renamed FedEx Field or what. We believe launching in February 2020 gives us the time to get the game, the fan experience, and the partnerships right, and we believe we are well on our way, Luck said. So the games will feature a shorter play clock compared to the NFL, and games will conclude in less than 3 hours. Rules will be simplified, and broadcasts will air fewer commercials. The XFL is currently testing out elements of its format using junior college football teams to solidify a final on-field product. All 8 XFL teams will have the same roster budget, Player salaries will be very competitive, whatever that means, and rosters will be drawn from all available players, including those who have been cut from NFL teams. The XFL will play its games during the NFL's offseason and will complement, not directly compete, with the NFL. That was also the idea of the XFL. The league will fully implement gambling in all states where it's illegal. Players will be tested for performance-enhancing drugs. Commissioner Luck said the XFL will air on multiple platforms with details on media partners to come in the near future. So I guess they're hoping for a network partner or maybe a cable TV partner. Vince McMahon sold WWE shares worth $100 million to bankroll the relaunch of the XFL. The original XFL, which formed as a joint partnership between WWE and NBC, folded in 2001 after just one season. I think I inadvertently referred to the previous league as the USFL. That was a different configuration that happened back in the 80s. Texter caught that. Bobby, Vince McMahon's original football league was also called the XFL, not the USFL. You are correct. Quarter before 7 here on the Bobby Mack Show. I believe we have time for Boneheads in the News, which we will get to next here on the Bobby Mack Show as we draw towards the conclusion of the bonus hour here on Thursday. Welcome back. Great to have you along. The closing minutes of the penultimate workday edition, the Thursday edition of the Bobby Mack Show. And as promised, here we go. All set for today's edition of
Boneheads in the News.
Yes. Boy, here's a guy that I'm sure the parole board is happy. They said, you're free to go. A Philadelphia man's freedom from the Westmoreland County Prison on Tuesday was short-lived moments after Thomas Lee Williams, 36, old enough to know better, was released from the Hempfield Jail at about 6:15 in the evening. Police said he attacked a West Leechburg woman in the parking lot, took her SUV, and fled with her one-year-old grandson in the back seat. Nice. There's a guy that certainly deserved to be out. Williams crashed 2 miles away about 15 minutes later, ran into a wooded area, and was eventually apprehended, according to Park Police Chief Kirk Nolan. He was back behind bars the next day, now on $250,000 bail. Investigators are examining surveillance video from outside the prison. It appears the victims and suspect did not know each other, but authorities are continuing to investigate. Both the boy and his grandma taken to hospitals to be checked out. The woman had cuts and abrasions, but all's well that ends well. Williams charged with kidnapping, robbery of a vehicle, and 2 counts each of aggravated assault and reckless endangerment. Yeah, he was a great choice to let out of the Gray Bar Hotel. Well, if this was about not getting enough ketchup, then there's something seriously wrong with this guy. If it was barbecue sauce, well, sorry, still, nut job. 59-year-old Earl Jethro, ordered a meal at a Popeye's chicken joint in New Orleans last Friday. Then they had some sort of issue about his condiments. We're guessing he wanted more and didn't want to pay for them. He ultimately decided to handle the situation by chucking his chicken across the room, pulling a gun from his waistband, and pointing it at the manager.
I mean, that's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous. There's no reason for someone to take that kind of anger on innocent people and come back and be so angry with someone.
Well, I hope they find whoever it is that did that.
Yeah.
And they get justice.
I'm just absolutely shocked that that would happen around here.
Yeah, luckily, nobody was hurt in the incident. Earl ended up leaving. He was arrested after cops found him causing a scene at a Church's Chicken across the street. He wasn't done yet. According to the police report, he was wobbly on his feet and smelled of alcohol. Least surprising part of this story, facing two separate charges, aggravated assault with a firearm, and disturbing the peace while overserved, or some of you may prefer to describe it. He was drunk. Well, I knew I could always count on my hometown territory to come through in the clutch. Yeah, check this out. It's amazing what people will do to save $6. Yesterday, you see, was the Cheesecake Factory's 40th anniversary. So they gave away 40,000 free slices of cheesecake to celebrate. The only way to get them, though, was to order them on DoorDash. Yeah, they thought it was a pretty cool idea. In theory, what actually happened was people flooded DoorDash with orders, which led to chaos at a bunch of Cheesecake Factory locations across the country as drivers battled for parking spots and crammed into the restaurants. It got so bad at the Cheesecake Factory in my birthplace, Arlington, Virginia, that one DoorDash driver wound up getting arrested for disorderly conduct when the cops showed up and he got into a fight with them. I gotta get my free slice. Cheesecake Factory hasn't made a statement yet, but DoorDash tweeted that they expanded the offer and managed to deliver more than 60,000 free slices of cheesecake around the country. Eventually, holy cow. Ay, ay, ay. Yeah, come celebrate our 40th anniversary. 40,000 slices of cheesecake on us. Catherine Watson tweeting, people fighting over free cheesecake in Clarendon. That's what we need right now. Arlington County Police and medics responding to Clarendon after a promotion for free cheesecake. Holy cow. Don't forget, you can still enjoy a $0 delivery fee on cheesecake orders now. Yeah, right. Well, it certainly beats trying to go by the shop, I guess, where people are beating each other up to try and get their free cheesecake. Next anniversary, they may rethink their promotional idea. There you go. There is the Thursday edition of
Boneheads in the News.
I got to wrap things up for this evening. Thanks so much for being along. We do it all again tomorrow, and who knows what may be in store. Because, of course, as we wrap up the work week, it will be the Friday free-for-all.
What?
Yeah, whatever you want to talk about will be fair game. See you then. God bless.
Back home, folks.
Well, kids, that's our show for today. And now, in the words of Mr. Cole Porter,
every time we say goodbye,
goodbye.
You say goodbye, and I say hello.
Hello, I must be going. I must be going.
So long, farewell, our feet are saying goodbye. I leave and heave a sigh and say goodbye.
Goodbye.
I'll be back.
Goodbye to you.
Goodbye.
Concludes our broadcast day.
Goodbye.